When we moved over here to Great Britain from the United States 12 and a half, almost 13 years ago, we had to learn not just a whole new way of driving, because of course, over here in Britain, we drive on the left-hand side and you sit on the right side and shift with your left hand. So that was a whole new way of learning how to drive. But it was really more than anything that struck us right away was learning a whole new system of navigation. Because of course, in America, where I come from, we lived in Portland and Oregon for about 13 years. And you know, Portland is a nice, easy grid system. If I tell somebody, meet me on the corner of 122nd and Stark in Portland, it's so easy. I just find Stark and I keep driving and I watch the numbers. If they're going up, I know I'm going in the right direction until I hit 122nd. Or I just get on 122nd and keep driving until I hit Stark and I know I'm there. It's such a simple system of navigation, nice, easy grid system. But over here in Great Britain, this is a very ancient country. And of course, the roads, there's no grids or very, very few grids in this country. They're old roads that were later paved over, and they're just kind of wherever they are, that's what they are. And we learned that to navigate across country, to take a 3 or 4 hour trip, which for a British person, that's considered a super long trip, but for an American, that's nothing. You have to not only have a GPS, a sat-nav system, you need to plan your route out ahead of time before you even leave to know where you're going from place to place to place. You also need to bring a physical paper map with you, a map of the country, because at any point you could find a road that you need to go on. It could be closed and you've got to completely redirect your route and start all over in a sense and find your way to the next waypoint and get to where you're going to go. You might find yourself on a farm track driving for miles and miles and miles out of your way, but eventually it's going to get you there. And it's a whole new system of navigation. It's actually a whole new kind of philosophy, a new worldview, a new way of doing things that you just have to get used to, and you find yourself getting in trouble. I used to get honked at every time because they love the roundabouts here in Great Britain. They've got a roundabout every couple of yards. It seems like you're driving down the road, there's another roundabout and then another roundabout. They used to honk at me all the time because I was always in the wrong lane. I couldn't figure out the logic of how these stupid roundabouts worked, and I was always getting honked at and yelled at, and people were flipping me off until I finally figured out how the hell these things worked. And now I can navigate basically like a native, like I've grown up here, and I know this system now, but it's taken me a long time to figure it out. And I think the analogy is that when we're talking about if you've come out of evangelicalism, if you've come out of the church, if you've deconstructed on any sort of level your former faith, we're talking here of not just Christianity, but Judaism and Islam, whatever Abrahamic religion or whatever controlling religion, you've got to learn a whole new way to navigate life. You're working in a new worldview. You're living in a new reality now. The old rules, the old systems don't apply anymore. And the way you used to do things doesn't work. I mean, if I drove in over here in Great Britain, if I drove like I did in the States, I'd kill myself or I'd kill somebody else. Those rules basically, by and large, don't apply. Yes, there are some common principles, of course, but basically, if I drove the way I do in the States, I'd be dead or someone else would be dead. I'd be in a terrible accident. It just doesn't work. The system doesn't work. So you got to learn a new way of reality, a new way of thinking, a completely new way to navigate life. And as I say, I think this is a great analogy, something that works to describe my conversation with ex-evangelical or ex-evangelical Daniel Hobbs. It was a great conversation that we had last time in part one of this episode that I'm calling Voices from the Ex-Evangelical World. And that's really what this is about. And I love the fact that Daniel has a very measured, a very kind of a non-reactionary response, even though he comes out of evangelicalism, even though he had some bad experiences. It wasn't that bad compared to what a lot of other people have gone through and the abuse and the toxicity and the mental health and all the other problems, the sexuality and all the messed up issues that we have coming out of the mainstream evangelical or fundamentalist church. And I loved the fact that Daniel has a very measured response. It's very clear that he's thought these issues through and he's thinking, now, wait a minute. He's coming up as a voice on Twitter, especially. That seems to be his main sort of platform going forward. And he's kind of serving as a voice for that generation of people who are coming out of the church, as I say, and who are just finding their voice. And as he said last week, some of the reasons for what he does is that he's trying to create elbow room in criticizing the evangelical church, creating some elbow room, creating some space for people who maybe haven't found their voice yet or found their platform. And he's developing a platform along with some other people who have created some hashtags and things that have kind of caught on in the ex-evangelical community. And that's what I wanted to talk to him about. And in fact, if you remember last week where we ended our episode, we were talking about his Twitter feed, his Twitter platform, and we were getting into this issue of he kind of was surprised by the fact that the Twitter thing caught on for him. It was, and he said, it was one of the first things I found out that I was really good at, and people are listening, people are responding, and people are taking my words to heart and kind of, what does it all mean? Where are we going with this thing? And that's what we were talking about. We're going to get into more of that this week. We heard a little bit of his backstory last week, and now this week we're going to get into where's this movement going? Where does he see it going? Where does he want it to go if he wants it to go anywhere? And that's what we want to get into this week. So I invite you to come along with me and Daniel Hobbs as we listen into part two of Voices from the Ex-Evangelical World. I heard someone on the radio the other day, I was listening to BBC Radio over here, and this woman was saying that one of the things about social media that they're realizing more and more is that people want they want that validation. Especially, I think Twitter is a place where, I don't know if you feel that way, it sounds like that's what you were describing, that it's a potential trap, isn't it? That the more retweets you get, the more likes you get, the more responses you get, the more followers you get, this is somehow validating to our psyche, isn't it? Or it can be. Mm-hmm. You feel like, how many, did I pick up any followers today or this week? Or how many retweets did I get? Or you know, how many followers do I have this week as compared to 6 months ago? Or it can be a thing where that becomes an end game in and of itself. And that's, you know, it could be damaging too when people start trolling you too, isn't it?
Yeah, I like to think that I'm pretty good at dealing with the troll part of Twitter just because I am super willing to hit mute after about two replies and let them scream into the void for as long as they want to.
Just mute them.
I'll give about two replies to see if somebody's willing to actually have a conversation. And if it just keeps being obnoxious and combative, I'm just going to hit mute and move on. It just doesn't interest me. But for me, the weird thing is, as somebody who wants to be creative, as somebody who's made music, who's made podcasts, who's written and has tried to make platforms out of all of these things, while yes, it can be just an addictive game to be good at Twitter, Twitter is the first thing that I've been good enough at describing my experience through for other people to see it, and then they read my writing, or then they check out something I make creatively somewhere else. So it's also validating in that sense that parts of my audience enjoy these other things that I create. And
yeah, you must be doing something right.
It gives me a chance to actually put them out there.
Yeah, you're striking a nerve or something. I think that's one of the big things that for me comes out of having relationships with people like you and some of the other people that I've met through the ex-evangelical group and in other places, that it's very empowering, I think, when you find people who respond and they say, yeah, I have a shared story. We're coming from the same place. You're not alone in this thing. You're not crazy. There are dozens of us, as they say. There's,
yeah,
for
exactly.
Sure, there's dozens.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's, you go, okay, I'm not alone in this. We had a couple of meetings just recently in the Seattle area, from some of the people in the ex-evangelical group as I've been traveling back and forth to the States. And that's been really cool to meet people in person rather than just exchanging tweets and Facebook posts and things, to sit down at a restaurant and spend a few hours and let's hear your story. And there's all this common threads that we're establishing. So I don't know where that's going, but every time I go to Seattle, we have another meeting. So we're not starting a church or anything. That's for sure.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. Not doing that.
That's the thing. That's the thing that I think a lot of people struggle with as they even just try to get together afterwards, is there's like so many of us that don't even want it to kind of feel like church at all. If
absolutely.
It starts to feel like church at all, it just ruins it.
It just ruins
for so
the whole
many
thing.
People. So we're just getting together. It's okay. We're just going to hang out.
Yeah, no, we can have
no
a
big deal.
Yeah, we can have a beer, we can have a meal or a coffee and just sit and chat and get to know each other a little bit. But then it comes back to that question, as you said before, where's this thing going? Where do we want to end up? Do we want a movement? That's the thing. And is this a movement right now? Because you said something before we recorded, okay, this movement, this ex-evangelical thing has changed in the last, 3 months, 6 months? What's the changes that you're seeing? And are they for the better, or?
I think that it's the changes I've seen. I've not been around this movement and its particular shifts for that long. It's probably been less than a year so far, maybe a little more than a year. But basically, I was kind of going through all of this, just wandering around trying to figure it out and having maybe a couple people here or there that I would find talking about the same things. And when I found the podcast and the Facebook group, it was about the time that it started expanding pretty rapidly because they had just opened it up to people. I didn't know about it when it was only for Patreon subscribers, but they had just opened it up to people that weren't. And so when I joined up, there were maybe 700 people in there, and now it's over 2,500, right? It's
something
it's
like
pretty
that.
Giant.
Yeah. It just keeps growing all the time.
Yeah, so if that's happening in less than a year, and then it carried over to Twitter once we started becoming more effective at sharing hashtags and finding each other. Now we really have to take a second, I think, and just ask ourselves what we're doing in one-on-one conversations and small group conversations. Because one of my fears, I know something happened recently, and this will be my plug for somebody else. If you're not following Tori Douglas on Twitter, you should definitely go follow her. I think it's at Tori Glass is how she has her handle. But she was in a group message with me and several other people, and some things went down that were a result of just kind of a lack of awareness on where people needed to be focusing their energy in fighting oppressive talking and fighting hurtful actions that were just really damaging. And the whole thing was pretty eye-opening to me that I don't think even with the best intentions, the large majority of our movement has healed enough from trauma and learned enough about justice and how to enact it in the world to be able to function as an organization necessarily.
It's
now, there may
entity.
Be some of us who can form some smaller things along the way. And I think I'm in conversations where stuff like that is happening, but I don't know that ex-evangelical, because of our willingness to be inclusive of everything from healthier versions of Christianity to atheism and so forth, I don't know that we're going to come to a cohesive voice that can pick one purpose. I think what we've done is create a network where you can figure out what you're going to do and who you're going to do it with within the framework of a shared experience.
And why you want to do it too. That's got to be an important question too, huh? It's one thing, as we say, just simply to bash on the church, or we can sit around. We're talking about a huge group of people, like you say, with a lot of psychological damage, emotional scarring, even from sexual abuse, and sexuality has been messed up. I mean, there's so many problems. You're dealing with people that are really hurt and damaged and traumatized by their experiences within fundamentalism and evangelicalism. So it's easy to sit around and rip on the church. And I think, as we said before, some of that's, it's got to be validated. It has to be, surely, but it's not healthy. It's not productive to stay in that place forever, is it? I mean, it can't be.
I'm not sure. I know that there's a lot of stuff to unpack. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of theology in some people's case. There's a lot of just personal abuses you know, sometimes so many of us experience things that we're not even directly an action of the church, but because it's connected to the people who were also abusing us spiritually, we tie all of that together, and it feels very overwhelming at times. And if you deconstruct beliefs that were a core part of who you are, it's, you know, our sense of self and how we develop that is very dependent on other people. And if you all of a sudden start losing a part of yourself based on what you believe, and then you also lose the other people that were a community surrounding that, you've now lost a lot of the ways that your brain develops its sense of who you are. And so that's why I appreciate the ex-evangelical stuff on Twitter, and when I go into the Facebook group, is it's not just validating in the sense of now I know that I'm not lying to myself, but it's also genuinely building a part of myself that goes, okay, this is a part of my truth now. I can come to accept this. This is who I am. I don't know the rest of the pieces yet, but this is like one building block I can go on, is not being accepting of this kind of fundamentalism and intolerance.
Well, and I think another problem too, as you said that, made me think about what's going on right now in American politics and religion. And I think this is why a lot of the posts that I see and tweets, I mean, look what's going on right now. Here's Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, just recently saying this stuff about quoting the Bible to justify Donald Trump's immigration policies. And that triggers a lot of people. And it's another thing. It's like, we can't get away from it. Every time we think we're okay, something like this happens, and another outrage and another outrage and another thing where evangelicalism has co-opted the Bible and co-opted Jesus for political ends and blah, blah, blah. So it's like you can't escape the madness. It's all pervasive. It's certainly in America. It's not so much over here in Great Britain. I mean, I've said this before, that I've realized in the last year or two how lucky we are to be over here on this side of the world, because it's just a totally different culture. Evangelicalism is just not part of British culture. There are some big churches, but it's just not, it's not even really a thing. And it's not, you don't see all this stuff about politics and religion intertwine. Even though there's a constitutional connection between the state and the church, it's not nearly as emphasized as it is in America, which is ironic because there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, you know, but it's so intertwined with each other that we can't get away from it.
It's very bizarre, and I get very frustrated with the influence that it has on politics. I've gotten kind of frustrated lately. There seems to be this frustration building in me that the very people who are claiming they need religious freedom and freedom of speech intentionally antagonize most of us that do not look like them and or believe like them. And as they antagonize us further and further for not being comfortable with their intolerance, then they accuse us of being fascist in the way that we shut down free speech or freedom of religion. And I don't think that that's what we're doing. I think we're just pointing out the problems in it, and mixing it with politics is problematic. That's what we're trying to point out. But then they turn around and they enact these fascist policies to separate kids from their parents and take refugees and imprison them instead of giving them shelter. And I just can't imagine anything more devious than that, than claiming to be for freedom on face value, antagonizing people who disagree with you, and enacting actual human rights violating policies.
And quoting the Bible, quoting the Bible to justify the whole thing. It's unbelievable. Yet so many other verses could have been cited about welcoming the stranger and welcoming the immigrant in your community. Totally overlooked those things, but cherry picking verses out of Romans or wherever to back up their immigration policies. It's hard to get away from that, isn't it? I was going to ask you too, what kind of trolling have you gotten? Because you mentioned that a couple times. People have come against you. What kind of stuff is being said by evangelicals, fundamentalists who are upset with your platform and what you're trying to do? What kind of pushback do you get?
Well, oddly enough, I think most evangelicals that push back against me are generally kind of just a mad person or a bot or something, because they're not usually somebody that has a large platform themselves. They're just going out and somebody tells them about one of our hashtags or something and they go check it out and then they start trolling all of us. So I deal with that from time to time, but that's pretty easy. I think the biggest pushback I get is from people who have partially deconstructed and who aren't in agreement with me in what I want to do politically and what I believe now, and they insist on categorizing me as a sort of new fundamentalist, which I jokingly made my name on Twitter for a little bit.
Yeah, I saw
just
that
because
the other day.
There's certain things I'm not going to accept. I'm not going to accept if you're consistently saying rude things about women online. I'm not going to accept if you're consistently being sneaky about the fact that you're not actually affirming of queer people, but you don't talk about it. It's why I like Church Clarity as an organization, trying to force churches to actually state what their position is on marriage equality and queer inclusion. And if people are being unclear, they're going to give them an unclear rating. And generally, if they see that their policies line up with non-affirming, call them unclear, unaffirming. And people get frustrated. They say that this whole idea that we're going to expect to at least know that you aren't mistreating people. We expect basic level human decency from people, and that makes us fundamentalists is quite infuriating to me as somebody who's spent a lot of time deconverting from and fighting against fundamentalism.
But as you say, it's an amorphous group out there. It's not an entity that has one singular identity. As you said, there's all kinds of different people along the spectrum that identify as ex-evangelical, but they could be anywhere from atheists to agnostics to still being a Christian. So you're dealing with all kinds of different people coming from different places. How do you respond to all that? I mean, it's got to be difficult, isn't it? Because you're not dealing with the same profile of person every single day who's going to respond to one of your tweets.
Yeah, I think you start to notice some trends. My usual thing, if somebody's really just harping on me a lot, I usually just try to ignore that conversation because it's never somebody genuinely trying to come to an understanding. It's somebody that just wants to go back and forth with you on the internet.
You just want to go toe-to-toe and yeah, stir things up.
Yeah, and if I wanted to do that, I could just get on Facebook and comment on political posts. But I got really tired of doing that. I got really tired of the back and forth that never goes anywhere. So now I attempt to only interact with people that are interested in having a real conversation. And if they aren't, then that's okay. I'm not going to sit and waste a lot of my time doing something that's counterproductive to where I want to be. And so I find it hard to manage at times when I don't know what to say to someone who's hurting, or I don't know what to say when I've done something that wasn't right, other than just apologize and you just have to leave it there and do better next time. There's no magic way to get back the person you were before you made that mistake.
Yeah.
But I find it more interesting to have conversations with people trying to push the level of dialogue forward. And if they are asking questions, they're genuine questions, not gotcha questions. But I kind of try to read that out as the conversation's going on. And other times I just troll evangelical pastors because they're saying terrible things. But that's a different story.
A different thing, and it's a different story. So you can troll somebody sometimes. What kind of stuff are you seeing out there in the evangelical world? I mean, obviously there's going to be the big political stuff. What other kinds of things are you seeing?
The most damaging evangelical voices are not even necessarily the most political ones, like Falwell and Graham, though they are quite obnoxious and awful. I find way more problems with the types of evangelicals that were looked up to in my circles growing up, where you have the John Pipers and the Mark Driscoll, who somehow has made a comeback after everything he's done. And you have Francis Chan, who's not on Twitter, but I just find a lot of the things he does to be theologically very problematic while he doesn't get super involved on the political side. And I find it more damaging because this middle road evangelical that claims that they're not affecting politics and that they're just preaching pure gospel while still affecting politics and still being buddy-buddy with everybody that is super into the political sphere, I think that that's the kind of people I grew up with, and I think they give cover to the extremists. I find them extremists in their own theology, but they give cover to the extremists that are going to make terrible changes in our government by putting on a face of it not being political when it is.
So they're giving some legitimacy to it by, yeah, throwing some Bible verses in there, some good theological talk that's going to sound good, and you end up with turning an old Walmart into a concentration camp, basically, for immigrant children.
Exactly.
How in the hell is this happening? I mean, this, you know.
I honestly, it's happening because we've slowly normalized this through making American Christianity what it is, and this was the logical conclusion it was coming to be perfectly honest. I mean, if you look through the history, especially with the way that white American churches handled everything through slavery and post-slavery, there's no question in my mind that the church itself has far too many skeletons in its closet when it comes to race. And there's no way to bring that and say that you're just about your religion or you're just about your gospel, and that they now claim that they're not exclusively white spaces, that they welcome anyone, but they're always run by white men who don't accept queer people or theologies that are different than their own, then you're going to continue to have a system that is exclusive to people of color and other minorities. It's just going to happen naturally.
Yeah, you're
when those are the only people you allow to be leaders.
Yeah, systemic racism, the ones who are in charge are mostly white people. Someone said the other day on Facebook, a friend of mine said that people are always talking about, well, this is un-American, that what's happening at the border. It's un-American. He said, un-American? Have you seen our history lately? I mean, so
right.
So when they had slaves, they never separated mothers and children and sold them off to different slave owners. Oh, no, that's un-American what we're doing now. I mean, come on.
Right.
It's American.
It's very American,
yeah,
for sure.
And they had, you know, the South had all kinds of preachers that, you know, every Sunday they would have sermons that propped up slavery and the institution of slavery as the ideal that God laid down in the Bible and all the rest of it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So that was 150 years ago or more. I mean, so there's a lot of skeletons in the closet for sure. You have a voice to say something about it. I think that's one of the things that strikes me is that someone like you, you're not just content to do perhaps your own deconstruction on your own. You want to say something to the world. You want to get it out there and find other people maybe who are doing it too. I don't know, you know, where you think this thing's going to go. I don't know where we're going with this thing, but we're on a ride anyway. We're on a journey.
Right. I think that's the thing that I try to focus on is the day-to-day of it all and appreciating a moment and appreciating my opportunity to share and that anybody cares in the first place when I share, instead of trying to turn it into goals every time. Because there's just certain times where you're going to set unattainable goals out of idealism for what you want to do next, and you're going to be disappointed, I think, in a movement that's this diverse. I think you've got to be way more willing to go with the flow and see what kinds of things you can do and jump in when there are opportunities. But I don't know that ex-evangelicals ever going to be anything big and cohesive. I don't see it. There's too much. One of the things I appreciate about the ex-evangelical movement is its willingness to accept diversity of thought. And I don't think that you can make it any more cohesive and uphold that value.
Yeah, that's a huge core value for sure. Well, what are some of the hashtag campaigns? I'm thinking if someone's listening and says, okay, I want to connect with you, Daniel, what do I look up? How do I follow you? What's your Twitter handle? And what are some of the more common hashtag campaigns that are going on right now?
Sure. So you can follow me at HobbsIsMe, HobbsIsMe. And I feel like things have caught on at different times. So if you jump into these hashtags, you will probably find some older tweets from all of us, because I think it's been a while since we came up with a new one. But I know Exvangelical is obviously one. Hashtag Empty the Pews is one where we've left a lot of content. You can check out hashtag Being Exvangelical, which I saw somebody make that statement, and it struck me that I feel like there's a lot of experiences that are unique to being exvangelical, and I wonder if we could get this hashtag going, and we did. And that one is way more people being very personally open and vulnerable, I feel like, than a lot of them that are more yelling at the church. Being exvangelical is a lot of people exposing what actually goes on in their own day to day and how they feel, which I thought was special. And you got hashtag Christian Alt Facts for some of the crazy things we were all taught as if they were completely normal, and they're based loosely on the Bible usually. Sometimes they're just completely made up things that happen culturally, but that's an interesting one. I think there's always some new things going. I know back in the day we did some funny ones like ex-evangelical catchphrases and ex-evangelical pickup lines. If you just want some more lighthearted, funny stuff, we did that back several months ago. But yeah,
so there's different campaigns.
Oh, and How to Evangelical is one of my favorites that a friend of mine, Liz, started. And it's just basically you can identify evangelical behaviors fairly easily and their theology when they start talking. So there's just a lot of things where they come in and push back on us, and we kind of notice it and turn it into the hashtag How to Evangelical based on their actions.
I got in on that Christian Alt Facts a week or two ago, and it was quite funny to read some of the things. And then I had to struggle to think of some that weren't already said. I thought, oh, I should have said that. That's so good, man. But
yeah.
I had some ones that kind of got picked up on.
I was surprised at the depth to which some of those lies ran for some people.
Well, absolutely.
Because I've told people this before, but I feel like I grew up in a more moderate evangelical setting. So a lot of times I started a conversation based on something I thought was crazy from my childhood, and everybody around me ends up being somebody who was raised in a far more extremist version.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, yeah, that is crazy. Check out this crazy thing I grew up with, and it's way worse. And it freaks me out every time. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what were they doing to these kids?
Well,
they're telling them all kinds of craziness.
Just after this episode drops, part two, I'm going to be in Seattle again in a couple of weeks here while these are dropping, but I'm meeting up with a couple of friends of mine. We actually went to Christian high school together, and these guys all came out of fundamentalism. So we're going to be sharing some of those insane stories of what it was like to grow up evangelical. And it's just, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's just, it only makes sense to someone who grew up in it or something similar to it. It's just unbelievable the damage that's been caused psychologically, emotionally, and so forth. That still is with us today, even years and years later. So I was going to say one last thing. You mentioned you have a blog. How can people follow some of your writings? What's, if they can check out some of the stuff you've written?
Yeah. So if you go to my Twitter page, the link is up there in my bio, but it is, for anybody that's just looking to get to it quickly, it is DanielNathaniel.wordpress.com, which I have not updated and need to. and need to do more with my blog. But I've written several things since. That was kind of one of the initial places that I came out as ex-evangelical and as a non-believer in general. And it's also a place where if you scroll back far enough, like some people do, which freaks me out, you'll find some of the things that I used to write as I was deconstructing or when I just fully believed. So there's some really interesting stuff back if you go to the back catalog there.
Go back into the archives.
But I just kind of leave it up as a reminder of my journey. I try not to wallow in where I was, but I do have a tendency to do that sometimes.
I've left some posts up that I put on my website, and it's the same kind of thing. I thought, well, I should take these down, but I thought, no, let's leave them here for the same exact reason, where I was really, really passionate about reforming the church from within and really going after it. But, you know, that's all in the past, but that's where I was. That was a place in my life. So I'm not, it's just part of where I was on my journey. So I'm not ashamed of it. It was just, I used to be a teacher. I mean, that's what I taught every day at Bible college over here, Bible theology. I was really about, you know, missional churches and getting out there, changing the world, man. I was all fired up. Mm-hmm. And not so much anymore. I'm not so much into propping up the institution. Well, listen, this Definitely. Has been great. I'm so glad that we finally connected. We've been trying to put this recording together and bounce back and forth a little bit, but this actually works really good for me because I'm just about to fly back to the States, but as I said, when this episode drops, I'll be back over in Seattle. So thanks, Daniel, for, you know, spending an hour or so with us. And I'm sure we'll see you on Twitter for sure. Hopefully you'll get a few more followers out of this. You know, that's not a bad thing, is it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I certainly hope you enjoyed this conversation and last week's with Daniel Hobbs. And if you are not already following Daniel on Twitter, you definitely need to. You can find him at Hobbs Is Me. That's HOBBSISME at Hobbs Is Me on Twitter. And you can follow me as well at MindShift2018 on Twitter. Also, I've mentioned too that if you want to get a hold of me and I can put you in touch with Daniel, if you can't find him on Twitter, maybe you're not on Twitter. You can find a variety of ways to contact me in terms of social media. And as always, I put those in the show notes. You can also find out information on how you can become a supporter of independent media. You can be a supporter of MindShift Podcast for as little as $1 a month and become a part of the closed MindShift Podcast Facebook group. And the information as to how you can do that either on Patreon or on Podbean, if you're an Android subscriber to this podcast, is also in the show notes. So what's coming up in the next few weeks? Well, as I've mentioned before, I've been commuting back and forth from the United Kingdom back over to Seattle, where my wife has basically quit her job to take care of her father, who's got a brain tumor, and she's been doing that for several months now. There's been a couple of cool things, though, that have come out of my trips back and forth to Seattle, besides being able to visit my wife, which is always nice, isn't it? The first really cool thing that happened in Seattle was that we've had two Seattle ex-evangelical meetups. This is part of the Ex-Evangelical Facebook group, and if you're not a part of that and you identify as an ex-evangelical, someone like Daniel Hobbs or myself, you definitely should join the Ex-Evangelical Facebook group. We've had some of those get-togethers, so those have been really good, really empowering, a way to meet up and kind of put people's faces to the names and hear everyone's stories of coming out of evangelicalism. And then the second really great thing that's happened while I've been in Seattle is I've been able to do some really good podcast recordings with some people that I've met up with. And of course, one of those was the episodes that just dropped right before Daniel's too. And those were the ones I did with Brian Staples. I recorded those down in the Tacoma area, which is just south of Seattle. And then I was able to meet up with some friends of mine, Bob Grayman and Jeff Judd. We actually went to Christian high school together. We all came out of evangelicalism, if not fundamentalism. And we shared some absolutely hilarious, amazing, unbelievable stories of what it's like growing up evangelical. So stay tuned for those episodes coming up in the next few weeks. And also in the month of August, my sister Valerie is coming back over here to the United Kingdom. We're going to take an epic World War I battlefield tour of Belgium and France in the month of August. But while she's here visiting here on The Rock in North Wales, we're going to do another episode, kind of a follow-up to the one we did last year about growing up fundamentalist and surviving a fundamentalist upbringing. And if you haven't heard that one, you definitely need to go back into the archives and catch that episode, Surviving a Fundamentalist Upbringing with Valerie Cunningham. And so we're going to be doing that in August at some point. So that's going to be coming out too, kind of an update of where are we at now, almost a year later, almost exactly a year later from when that episode came out. What's changed? What's different? How have our lives changed in the last year? Where have we gone and where are we currently going? So thanks for joining me. I've been your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, and I'm glad to have brought you this episode this week and last week with Daniel Hobbs as we listen to voices from the ex-evangelical world. I will catch you next Friday right here on Mindshift Podcast. Yes,